So tonight is the last of this series of these unbelievable tzaddikim, of these lights in the darkness of the Holocaust period. And if we take a step back as we reflect on so many amazing people, on the stories of these tzaddikim, we can ask ourselves a question, which is, why is it important to tell these stories? So we can answer that question with a story. It was in a terrible place. The place is called the Janowska or the Janowska work camp, not far from Lublin. And the Germans, Yamach Shemav Zichram, who ran this camp, they decided they were going to have a particular activity for the Jewish inmates, the slave laborers who were in this Janowska work camp. And there had recently been a series of bombs, of bombardments in the area, so there was a huge ditch near the camp. So they marched all the prisoners out to the ditch, and they said that each one of these malnourished, fatigued, broken Jews is going to jump over the ditch. And if a person can't jump over the ditch, that's going to be the end. So two men approached the ditch, and they knew each other from before the war. And one looks at the other and he says, "I guess this is the end." The other one says, No, we're gonna try to jump." These two frail, broken Jews. So one stands in front and he closes his eyes and he looks at this enormous trench and he musters all the strength that he has. He closes his eyes. He leaps. He finds himself on the other side. And he turns next to him and he sees the other Jew is standing right next to him on the other side of the trench. So the second man, who couldn't have imagined getting over the trench, says to the first one, he says, "How did you get over the trench?" So the man says, "I closed my eyes and I imagined my father and I held on to his coattails. And that carried me across." And so the first Jew says to the second one, "So how did you get across?" The second Jew says, "I closed my eyes and I held on to your coattails. And that's what carried me across." That's why we tell these stories. Because maybe at some point in our lives we can close our eyes and hold on to the coattails of the holy Kloisenberger, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, of the holy Pius Setzner, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, Hashem Yikom Dam Meskusa Galenu, of Rav Gustman, Zichrono Levracha, and of the Heilige Bluzhe Rebbe, Rav Yisrael Spira, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, who was the man in this story. The Bluzhe Rebbe of Yisrael Spira was standing next to that pit with a non-religious man who he knew from before. And Rabbi Yisrael said he was holding on to the coattails of his father. His father was known, he's a Hasidic master, known as the Karen Yehoshua. And even this non-religious Jew from his neighborhood was able to hold on to him, kal v'chomer to us. We can hold on to the coattails of the Bluzhe Rebbe, and that can carry us over who knows what, obstacles and challenges in life, holding on to his coattails. Because what this man, who lived just a few months shy of 100 years old in his lifetime, what he endured, and yet what he built, it can be mechazik all of us. And that's why we're going to tell these stories. The Bluzhe Rebbe was an unmistakable tzaddik. In the simplest sense of the word, he was a pure anav. He was the epitome of humility. He was born in 1889. His father, the Karen Yehoshua, was a Hasidic master in a town called Raisha. His grandfather was also a very important Hasidic figure, who is the Rebbe in a town called Bluzhev. That's why he's going to be known later as the Bluzhev Rebbe. His grandfather was known as the Tzvi Letzadik. His grandfather was a grandson of the Bnei Yisrael, Rav Hirsch Melech Dinever. So the Bluzhev Rebbe was a direct descendant, the grandson of the Heilige Bnei Yisrael. So his father died when he was a relatively young man, but he was recognized already as an unusual tzaddik, a fine human being, and an accomplished Talmud Chacham. He was 19 years old when he became the Rav of a Galizianish shtetl called Prochnik. So he became known as the Prochnik Rav. But shortly thereafter, when his father passed away, so his father had indicated that he, this Rav Yisrael Spira, this young budding Talmud Chacham superstar Rebbe, should take his place in Raisha. But he didn't go there. He went to another town called Istrik. Why did he go to Istrik? Because his father had two wives. The Rebbe we're talking about tonight, when we say the Rebbe, we mean the Bluzhev, who becomes known as the Bluzhev Rebbe of Yisrael Spira. He was the son of the second wife of the Keren Yehoshua. But the Keren Yehoshua had a first wife with older sons. So even though the Keren Yehoshua indicated that the Rebbe should become the Rebbe in his, he said, no, I'm going to go to a smaller town. I'm going to go somewhere else. Why? So that the older half-brother, so that he should be the Rebbe in Raisha. That is an example of his anivus, of his tzidkus. My brother and I, we had a discussion on the phone this week when I was preparing, whether or not we remember ever having met the Bluzhev Rebbe. Because our second grade Rebbe, my second grade Rebbe, who is an exceptional tzaddik and a well-known, internationally renowned Baal Chesed, he's one of the founders of a major tzedaka organization where we grew up in Baltimore. He retired from being a Rebbe. He's the head of this tzedaka organization. It's called Avos Yisrael. So Avos Yisrael is the legacy tzedaka organization in Baltimore that takes care of, it's like the equivalent of Tomchei Shabbos and the Chicago Chesed Fund and the Ark, like very, very important basic needs for Jews in Baltimore. We used to make Shabbos packages. So Rabbi Baruch Brul, shall live and be well, Zol Gezun Zayin, he was my second grade Rebbe. And now he's the head of Avos Yisrael. At that time, he was like, I think, volunteering in Avos Yisrael together with the late Rabbi Elazar Izbi, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. So Rabbi Brul, I remember as a kid, he was essentially, his family, he was very close to the Bluzhev Rebbe. So my brother Yitzchak and I were having a discussion on the phone this week whether or not the Bluzhev Rebbe ever came to our elementary school, to TA, where we went to school. So I called Rabbi Brul. I said, did the Bluzhev ever come to TA? So Rabbi Brul said, I'm not 100% sure. He said he once brought the Bluzhev to Baltimore to meet the late Rabbi Steinberg, Zichron Levracha, the principal of Beis Yaakov, who was not well. So I was trying to do the math with my brother, Yitzchak. The Bluzhev passed away in 1989. He was born in 1889. But for the last year and a half, I don't think he was traveling. I don't think he was so well. So I'm trying to remember. I must have been, if I ever met him, I was 6 years old. But I had a chance to talk to Rabbi Brul this week when I was preparing to hear from him firsthand things that he experienced with the Bluzhev. So he told me, he said, this mitzvah he validated with members of the family. We said that the Bluzhev originally was known as the Prochnik Rav. After the war, when he had lost, as we'll talk a little bit later, his whole world, he came to New York. He started in Williamsburg, and then he moved to Borough Park. He decided that his major shteller before the war was Prochnik, so he would be known as the Prochniker. So Rabbi Brul told me that someone came to him a few months later, and they said to him, Rabbi Spira, for whatever reason, this other person, he would like to be known as the Prochniker Rav. So what did the Bluzhev say to him? No problem. Gesundheit. You be the Prochnik Rav. And that's how he became the Bluzhev Rebbe. Because he never even lived in Bluzhev. His grandfather lived in Bluzhev. He was very close to his grandfather. He was extremely close to his grandfather, Tzvi Letzadik. But because he was such a tzaddik, so someone else wants it? Okay. Rabbi Brul said to me, he said, it's hard to describe or imagine what that means. To a man who had lost everything, the only thing he had was this shred, this last connection. No, okay, you want that? Gesundheit. I read a maisa that he was giving over a tish once, and there was a guy who got up to leave early, and his coat was hanging near the Rebbe, and he motioned to a friend of his if he could pass him the coat to leave in the middle of the tish. But the Rebbe thought, the Blushefer thought he was talking to him. So he got up to get the guy's coat, and he handed it to him because he was such an anav. Rabbi Brill told me that his father, you know, was one of the European Jews who came to America after what had happened to them. They had a small group of Jews who got together with him. First it was in Williamsburg, and then it was in Bar Park. So Rabbi Brill said that some of the family members, and we'll see it in a little bit, he had two sons who were his sons, but from his second wife, that he kind of adopted them. So some of the members of the family said that that he should really start some kind of yeshiva or kollel, because other chassidus, other rebbes who had survived the war, they started, Babov and Satmar, they started a cheder and a yeshiva and a whole thing. So apparently, the Blushefer started in the shul, in the Beis Medrash, he started a little yeshiva where he was the rebbe, and they hired a Rosh Yeshiva to be the Magid Shir. And it was going to be in the Blushefer Beis Medrash, it was going to be the Blushefer Yeshiva. He says, after a few months, for some reason, this Rosh Yeshiva decided he was going to do his own thing. So he took the entire yeshiva and left and went somewhere else in Brooklyn. So the sons were very upset. They came to the Blushefer, they said, Rebbe, this is the legacy. This is the yeshiva. This is going to be the kollel. So you know what he said to them? He said, I never had a machlokas. I never went to a din Torah with anyone in my life. I'm not going to take him to a din Torah. If he wants to take the yeshiva, love him. Let him take it. So the family was so upset. So Rabbi Brill told me they went around to Rav Palm. To Rav Palm that he should say whether they should do a din Torah. Like, so Rav Palm said, apparently Bezeh Loshon, if he never had a machlokas with anyone, if he never went to a din Torah with anyone, Tavo Olav Bracha. Leave it alone. Leave it alone. Could you imagine? This is the kind of person that he was. And what's interesting is that Kolah Boreach Min HaKavod, a person who runs away from honor, what is the teaching from Chazal? Kolah Boreach Min HaKavod? HaKavod Boreach Acharav. People gravitated to him. So Rabbi Brill told me that what was his connection? He said that there were many of these, especially Polish Jews. He said many of the Polish survivors actually married Hungarians, which was very unusual before the war. He said these survivors, they went looking for a place. And where did they gravitate? They gravitated to the Blushefer. He said that in Bar Park, there were many shuls, and there were many rebbes, and many big Talmidei Chachamim. He told me there was a darshan. His name was Rabbi Zinger. He said he had huge, huge crowds. But Rabbi Brill said that he remembers as a kid that many of the rebbes and the rabbanim in Bar Park, they would come to the Blushefer for a tish. HaBoreach Men HaKavod, HaKavod Boreach Acharav. That people of great stature, Hamon Am, regular Jews, survivors of all types, and Chosh V'Yidin, and rebbes and rabbanim, they all recognized, they all gravitated to the Blushefer. Rabbi Brill told me that he heard from the Neuberger grandchildren that Rabbi Ruderman, Zichar Tzadik Levracha, Rav Ruderman was the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Neri Yisrael. He was a member of the Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah. That apparently, Rav Ruderman was a member of the Moetzes, and the Blushefer was a member of the Moetzes. Rav Ruderman would request to the Ma'arganim that whenever there was a meeting, that he would be had a seat right next to the Blushefer. Kol HaBoreach Men HaKavod, HaKavod Boreach Acharav. Rav Ruderman, who was one of the titans, right, of pre-war Europe, who was resettling in America, he says, if I'm going to the meeting, I want to sit next to the Blushefer. That was the kind of person that people appreciated. So he was, as we mentioned, he was born in 1889, which meant that as survivors go, he was actually quite elderly. When he finally arrived in America to resettle, he was in his early 50s, which is very unusual for that stage. He was, in his younger days, very close to his grandfather, to the Tzvila Tzadik. He married. He had several children before the war. Several of his children passed away, and then he had one daughter. Unfortunately, right toward the outside of the war, his daughter and his son-in-law were killed. he was taken with his wife to Belzec. And as many of you know, Belzec was a place where almost nobody came back from. So his wife was taken from him, and she was murdered in Belzec. But he actually survived Belzec and ended up, it's a whole long story, he ended up in this work camp called Janowska. Now this is probably how the Blujever became, you could argue, he's probably one of the most famous rabbinic survivors of the Holocaust. How? Because if you see on your paper, on the bibliography, there was a woman, a tremendous scholar of Holocaust literature, herself originally from Europe, yeah? Yaffa Eliach, who wrote a book, Chassidic Tales of the Holocaust. In this book, many of the stories are based on interviews with the Blujever Rebbe and with the Rebbetzin. So this is how that opening story that I shared with you about jumping over the pit, that appears in this book and many, many others. This is how the Blujever became extremely well-known far beyond Borough Park, because this is, you could argue, this is one of the classics of all of Holocaust literature and religious life in the Holocaust, and the Blujever features very prominently in many of these stories. So he ends up in this work camp in Janowska, in this place. Many things happened to him there. We're not going to even talk about all of them. He ends up getting out of the Janowska work camp. He runs away, but ultimately he gets deported after that to Bergen-Belsen. He ends the war in Bergen-Belsen. But that's where he met his wife, Branya, Zichrona Levracha, who was, people describe, a perfect match at Tzadikas, just like he was. There's a Rabbi Shafran, who is an educator. He was a leader in the Orthodox Union. So he wrote a little article about the Blujever, because he used to be in upstate New York in the summertime, and he describes watching the Blujever. And he even had the opportunity to once be in the car with him and the Rebbetzin to see the shining glow, the piety of the two of them together. He describes this in his essay. How did the Blujever end up getting married to this woman? She was an almana, of a chashuv person from before the war. So here's the maisa. You ready for this? This maisa, it's a shomu shamayim maisa. The Blujever somehow, he put in a request before Pesach in Bergen-Belsen that the Jews should be allowed to bake matzahs. Now, generally speaking, if somebody were to request from a German officer something like that, that probably would mean they would be shot. But not only was the Blujever spared, he was actually given the ability, they pulled together their rations, they were given the ability to use the bakery oven, the whatever oven they had there, and they baked a few matzahs before Pesach in Bergen-Belsen. The problem was that shortly before Pesach, after they had baked a few matzahs, one of the local German overseers intercepted some kind of letter that was being passed from one prisoner to another, which was a very egregious offense. You're not allowed to pass letters. So the guy was very angry, and he shut down the matzah bakery oven, and he smashed the oven. He said, no more matzahs, no more baking. So it comes right before Pesach, and there are only a handful of matzahs. So what are they going to do? So the Blujevers get together with a couple of people, and they're trying to decide, how do they apportion the matzahs? Could you imagine? How to apportion matzahs when you have all these Jews and not enough matzahs? So they're trying to figure out, should it go to the older chevra? Should it go to younger people? How do you make that decision? So there was one person who interrupted the whole conversation. One woman! She screams out, Bin Raini Viskanaini Neilich. What does the pasuk say? We will go with our children and with our elders. She says, first it says we go with the children, then we go with the elders. She says, I know that according to the halacha, the children, they're not obligated to eat matzah. But if the whole point of the Seder is to educate our children, it's to inculcate them within them the emuna for the future, the children should get the matzah. She should give the children the matzah. This woman had with her four children. Two sons of her own, and two nieces that she was shepherding, whose family, you know what happened to them. So the Blujever said, She's right. She's right. So this is a famous maisa. I saw a postscript. I can't validate this, but apparently the postscript that I saw to this maisa was that this woman later came to the Blujever and said that she wanted to know if he thought there was a bracha for a shidduch, that someone was matziah to her. The shidduch was a man by the name of Rabbi Yisrael Spira. So the Blujever said, yeah, I think it's a good idea for a shidduch. P.S. That was him. But she didn't even know his name at the time. So ultimately, he said that a person, a woman who has so much faith, who has so much wisdom and so much insight to see the future of Klal Yisrael in the depth of Bergen-Belsen, that's the person who he would want to marry. The Kachaba, they both survived Bergen-Belsen. They came to New York and they married in New York. Now, he had to get visas. Her children actually were separated from them. They were sent to Israel. It's a whole other long story how they ended up coming to America. But that was the exceptional Rebbetzin, Branya or Branka Spira. One thing which is interesting about the Rebbe that I learned was that, you know, different survivors had different ways of relating to their experience. And the Rebbe was one to speak about it openly, to keep coming back to it, to mention it, to focus on it, to harp on it, and yet at the same time was able to continue to build and to support people after the war. He did a lot of fundraising to send to different survivors. The 7th Siyam HaShas was in 1975, and who was one of the speakers at the 7th Siyam HaShas? The Blujever. The Blujever remembered that in 1923, he was an attendee at the first convention, the Knesset HaGedolah of the Agudah, where they decided to launch the Daf Yomi project. So what did he pitch, and what did they decide at the 1975 Daf Yomi Siyam? That the Daf Yomi would be in memory of the 6 million. And he spoke, I listened to part of the, he gave a talk in Yiddish at the Siyam, at the Daf Yomi. He said, one of the things that he remembers that was so impactful to him, that was ringing in his ears. What did people say to him before they left everything? Shavak Chayim L'chol Chay in Belzec and in Janowska and Bergen-Belsen. He said, you know what people said to me? They asked me, the Blujever said, who's going to say Kaddish for me? Who's going to learn Mishnayos for me? This is what he said in front of thousands and thousands of people. So he said, the greatest thing that we can do is to learn for them and remember them. I came across this amazing maisa in a few places that apparently the Rebbe used to keep a piece of paper in his pocket. And apparently he once said to somebody, this paper is going to be his ticket to Olam Haba. What's on the paper? A little note. This took place on the night of January 13th, 1943. He's in Janowska. And a capo, Jewish capo, enters the barrack and asks to speak to the Rebbe. And obviously, you get nervous, lo aleinu, if you're in that circumstance. You don't want to get pulled out. But the Rebbe was pulled aside by this capo, and the capo handed him an envelope. He opens the envelope, and it says, my dear Rabbi Yisrael Spiritz, in Yiddish, you should have a good life. I'm working in a factory that makes bristles, 800 people here, and they just surrounded the factory, and I know what's going to happen to us. Please, dear Rabbi, if you are found to be worthy enough to be spared from this, and if you should be able to make it to the land of Israel, I'm asking one thing. Please put up a marker for me and my wife. But even better, no matter where you make your home, even if you don't make it to Israel, I'll ask you to do one thing for me. This is a total stranger. Can you please remember me and write a Sefer Torah in my memory and in memory of my wife? And in the envelope was a $50 bill. 1943 in Janowska, $50 bill. I hope that the person I'm giving this to will get you this note. I got to hurry. But when I get to the next world, he writes, I will convey your greetings to your holy ancestors and ask them to intercede on your behalf so that your days be long and happy. Your servant, Aryeh ben Leah Kornblit. And his P.S., his sister's children are living with a Gentile in a certain place. This is the note that the Blujever kept with him his whole life. And so in 1946, when he finally made it to the United States, he took out the note and he read it in front of a whole crowd. And he says, look at Mika Amcha Yisrael. What are they thinking at the last moment when their building is surrounded, when they know their life is over? If somebody could write a Sefer Torah for them, somebody could do a Maisa Mitzvah for them, somebody could remember them. Ashrecha Yisrael. So guess what? On the spot, everybody puts together, they have the $50 as the starter, they dedicate a Sefer Torah to the memory of this anonymous man, Aryeh ben Leah Kornblit, and they donated the Sefer Torah. The Rebbe said, send it to Tor Vadas, and that's what they did. He never forgot, and he was not quiet about it. He was very open. I saw in one of the memoirs, somebody remembered about the Rebbe, that the first year that he arrived in America, he read the Megillah, and he couldn't finish. Because it brought back the experience of reading the Megillah Baal Peh from the war, which was so painful for him that he couldn't finish, and he never read the Megillah again. You know, it kind of reminds me, one of the great tzchuyos that I had was, this is just a personal aside, you know, Rabbi Brill wasn't just my second grade Rebbe. Rabbi Brill also was a gabbai in our shtibol. Growing up, we had a really exceptional, unusual group of special people, old European Jews, many of them Holocaust survivors, and the Rebbe of our shtibol, whom I've spoken about before, the Heiliger Rabbi Amram Taub, Zecher Tzadik Levracha Zchus Yogin Aleinu, so Rabbi Taub in his shtibol, we had a very special group of people, and I still remember certain things about him, which now, in retrospect, I can understand a little bit maybe why they were so important to him. The Rebbe always, he blew the first of the tkiyas. Not only did the Rebbe go to the mikveh in the morning before Shacharis, we also had a break before tkiyas when the Rebbe would go to the mikveh again, and then he would blow the tkiyas. But in the later years, he could hardly even blow one tkiyah, but that's all he did. And I wonder if that was some way of connecting to him, to the Ruach Mamala, to the Neshamas, you know, he had before he came to Baltimore, before his new world, in the old world, he had a wife and five children, our Rebbe, Rabbi Taub, Zichrono Levracha. So this was a very real experience for the Blujever that he kept sharing with people. You know, apparently, whenever he would go to a bris, he would share a story, which is published in the Hasidic Tales, where he describes that he was once working in the forest, and there was, unfortunately, a group that was being rounded up, and there was terrible screaming, and there was children who were being taken away. And he saw there was a woman who went over to a German officer and says, I need a knife. So the guy was startled. So he took out a penknife, and he gave it to her. And she looked up at the Ribbono Shel Olam, and she was holding a bundle of rags. She took out from the bag the little bundle of rags, a little child, a little baby boy. And she said, Ribbono Shel Olam, you gave me this child, B'Kedusha V'Tahara, I'm going to return him back to you, B'Kedusha V'Tahara. She says the bracha, Asher Kedushanu Mitzvot V'Zivano Al Hamila. She gives the child a bris mila on the spot, standing there in front of everyone. She gives the German the penknife back, and she hands him the baby. Because they were collecting all the infants, all the children. So Blujever apparently used to tell this maisa, whenever he would go and speak at a bris. But it was part of his theme of Mika Amcha Yisrael. There's another story, we don't have time for it tonight, about this guy Shneivais. I highly recommend it. It's unbelievable, unbelievable maisa. Bechlal, the miracles of the way that he was saved, and the fact that he was such a tzaddik, these kind of like almost go hand in hand. Because part of this crazy story was that he was taken to Bergen-Belsen. When he was in Bergen-Belsen, when he went to the selection, the German officer who was standing there was a guy by the name of Muller, who the Blujever had known from before the war. the Blujever had known this man, and that when the Blujever used to take a walk in the morning, he used to say good morning to him. He used to say, good morning, Herr Muller. And when he got to Bergen-Belsen, he sees the man, and he says to the man, good morning, Herr Muller. And the guy sends him to life. He keeps him alive. But that's the tzidkus, to greet every person and to take care of them. But I'll end with one maisa, because this maisa really captures what he wanted us to know, which was that the overwhelming majority of people that he met, that he experienced, that he connected with, were people who were ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim, even though so much horror had happened to him. So the Blujever described that he was in Bergen-Belsen in the wintertime, it was 1944, and they had gotten together a couple of guys, had gotten together some lard or wax that you put on the shoes, something with shoes, I don't understand exactly, and that they had scraped together enough that they could take a little piece of cloth from their clothing and they were going to light it for Hanukkah licht. Could you imagine? So they arranged the first night of Hanukkah, they scraped it together, they put this tallow together, they put a little wick in it, and scores of people packed into the barracks to hear and see the Blujever light Hanukkah candles. So you can imagine, he says the bracha, asher kedushanu, he says sha'asanisim, and then shechyanu. So in front of everybody, there was a guy there, I think his name was like Mendel Korvich or something like that. He was a Bundist, non-religious, secular guy. So he says to the Rebbe, how can you say Shechyanu? Shechyanu in the hell of Bergen-Belsen. How can you say Shechyanu v'kimonu v'kimonu l'zman hazeh? So the Blujever says to him, he said, I thought the same question. But you know what we're saying Shechyanu for? Look around. We're seeing Shechyanu for the fact that despite everything, all of these Jews want to light Hanukkah licht. That's the Shechyanu. That we're all still lighting Hanukkah candles after everything that has happened to us. And so every week we've had Maislach, but we've also had a piece of Torah. I want to share with you a magnificent piece of Torah. Take a look on this page on the back. On the back of your page. This sefer, it's a two-volume set called Shufra di Yisrael, which is, Shufra means, Shfar means beautiful. So Shufra means the beauty of Yisrael, Rav Yisrael Spira. This Shtikl Torah, it was, these Torah Lach were compiled by students, people who came to the Tishon in America, and they published them in this volume. This Shtikl Torah is so beautiful, and I think it captures in so many ways the tzidkus, the humility, the humanity, the love, the appreciation of Jews. Listen to this amazing Shtikl Torah. So, this piece of Torah is on the pasuk of Timcha Ezecher Amalek. I was interested in this to hear how would the Rebbe relate to Amalek, because you could imagine this was a topic that probably had a lot of resonance with him. So he opens with three questions on the top right column. This is on page Reish Chav Dalet. Why does the pasuk say, remember, Zachor eis asher asal lecha Amalek, baderech betzeischem mimitzrayim? Why does it start in singular and then end in plural? The second question he asks is, why do you have to remove the Zecher Amalek? Just tell me that you should erase Amalek. And the third question is, why is it that if Hashem is going to remove Amalek in the future, why do we have to be active? So he says something so beautiful. And he quotes it from his Halakha grandfather, his grandfather's grandfather, the B'nai Yisachar, the Halakha Reb Hirsch Melech Bienever. He says, listen to this, so beautiful. And think about how fitting it is for the Blujever. Second line, second column. His grandfather B'nai Yisachar said, "Sheba'achris hayamim, at the end of days, ikar avodas hasamach mem." That's the Yetzer Hara. He laharbos machlokes upir levavos bein B'nai Yisrael ubekach la'akavis haguula. What's going to be the challenge of achris hayamim? fractiousness, machlokas, disunity. And that's going to keep us from being redeemed. Vehine, shoresh pora rosh velana shalapirud. What is the root of this evil wormwood of argument and machlokas? Is he gaiva vehisnasus? It's arrogance. Was there a person who loved Jews more than the Blujever? Was a person more humble? Was there a man who was more faginin than the Blujever? Shachushiv, a person thinks, Shemagia lu yoser mechavero, biglal shu yoser chachum, abal seichum imenu chadoma. I think I should get more than you. I, a big I. That's why people get into fights. I. Vizem iklipas amolik, he says, al pichsidus, what is the shell of Amalek? She'olu b'gematria, the number of gematria in Amalek is rum. What is la rim? Rum, merumam? Lift up. I say I'm merumam. Amalek is that spirit of arrogance, of haughtiness, of feeling like you're better than somebody else. That it's your yeshiva or your shtibel or your. Hainu shemevili de ramas ruchat. Causes arrogance, that God forbid, causes a machlokas. Says this is the pshat now. If Amalek is about arrogance, creating arguments, when we left Egypt, but when we left Egypt, we were united, but then Amalek showed up, and it caused strife. Top of the next column, we left Egypt and we felt like we were brothers. We were connected to each other to do chesed for each other. Amalek comes. Amalek injects factiousness. And by becoming arrogant, we don't have space for HaKadosh Baruch Hu either. As the Gemara says in Kiddushin. Va'al Zos, says the Rebbe in the next paragraph, beautiful pshat. Ba ha-mitzvah timche es zecher Amalek. We have to eradicate and erase the zecher Amalek. What is that? Zecher is Reish Chaf Zion, 227. What is Amalek? 240. What's 240 minus 227? 13. 13 is the gematria. Echad, oneness. Of the Yud Gimel, the gematria of Ava, of love. Rotzalomer shiu ba'ava va'achva, va'oz macho emcha zecha amalek. Hashem says, we, the Jewish people, we have to generate love between one another. And then Hashem says, macho emcha. Macho emcha, I will erase Amalek. After you guys find a place in your heart for all those other Jews. Lu chachmu yaskilu zos yavinu la'achrisam. Ksov zos yikar v'sefer. What is the Rebbe calling on us? He's calling on us to create a sense of Avas Yisrael through humility. All right, one last maisa. Can't help myself. You ready for this? The Blujever originally... He didn't even want to have a sign outside the Beis Medrash. Didn't want to have a sign. He said, if people want to find me, they'll come and find me. They got the call, I think they called the Beis Medrash Tzvi Letzadik. So right after he came to America, somebody said to him that you have to have a dinner to establish, you know, the Beis Medrash, the Mostos, you have to have a fundraising dinner. Right? You know this. So Blujever said, okay, so we'll have a fundraising dinner. Great. So he said that in advance of that first fundraising dinner, there was a guy we saw who he knew, who saw him across the street, and the Blujever went to talk to him, and he kind of like made this like awkward gesture. He's like, I'll send the check next week. And the Blujever realized that this guy was thinking that he was coming to hit him up for money for the dinner. So Blujever came back to the Hasidim. He said, after this, no more dinners. Because if it makes one Jew uncomfortable, I don't need a dinner. People will come, they'll give, that's fine. And that was it. There were no more dinners after that. Because if it makes one Jew uncomfortable, if it creates some distance between the Blujever and the holy Yidden who he was trying to serve, so that's what it matters. So someone said to him, but if you don't have a dinner, you're not going to have big mostos. He said, what do you mean, big mostos? This is not about a yeshiva or a kolo. This is about helping Jews. That's all I need. I just need a place, a base medrash where people will come and feel welcome. So I saw a woman wrote an article about the Blujever in the Mishpacha magazine a few years ago. I don't know exactly what she's up to now, but she says she's now writing for Mishpacha magazine. She says she remembers as a child, as a girl, davening in the Blujever shtiebel. She said it was an upstairs, because you know, at a shtiebel, a real shtiebel, like where I grew up, you have the Rebbe lives upstairs, and the Beis Medrash is downstairs. That's what it was, where I grew up. In Beis Medrash, Kila Kedosha, Aruga Sabosim. That's where our family daven. So she still remembers, the Rebbe's voice. And she says when she goes to Yom Menorahim now, she can never forget. She can never forget what it was like being in that place, the place where people felt love and welcome. She said there was upstairs and there was like a cutout in the floor and you could hear the Rebbe's voice leading the davening, wafting up through the floor to her ears. She said she still hears it to this day, Ara Yom Hazeh. What an unbelievable person. What a tzaddik. Now maybe we can't be as humble as the Blujever. Maybe we can't have as much Avas Yisrael. Maybe we can't be at that level of tzidkus. But we can hold on to the coattails of the Blujever. Be inspired just a little bit. Just to take that a little bit. It's the 3 weeks now. It's the time to create Avas Yisrael. To forgive somebody else. To be emche, macho timche es zecher amolek. To remove that arrogance and create that love, that echad between Jews, which is what he really modeled for us and for all of Klal Yisrael. Yehi zichro baruch, and thank you all for coming.